In the last decade, there has been a rise in single-sex classrooms in the United States. According to the National Association for Single-Sex Public Education, there were only about a dozen public schools that offered single-gender classrooms in 2002. But by the 2011-12 school year, at least 506 public schools in the United States offered single-sex educational opportunities.
With such an increase, there's been talk about the effectiveness of this educational strategy. Now a new major study out of the University of Wisconsin-Madison says there's actually little evidence that these classrooms offer any educational or social benefits.
Joining us now in the studio is Janet Hyde. She is a professor of psychology at the UW-Madison, and she is one of the authors of the study. Janet, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks. I'm glad to be here.
I want to talk a little bit about the background of single-sex education to kind of give us some context for all of this. As I understand it, single-sex education wasn't a very big deal, but then 2006, No Child Left Behind, some changes in Title IX kind of changed the landscape out there and led to a rise in single-sex classrooms. Is that correct, more or less?
Yes, that's right. Title IX, dating from the early 1970s, basically made gender segregation in the schools, in the public schools, illegal, with certain exceptions like physical education. And then in 2006, during the George W. Bush administration, they did issue guidelines that permitted some single-sex classes within coeducational public schools if there was a compelling educational interest that would be served by those single-sex classes. And that, of course, is the catch. Is there a compelling educational interest? Is there a compelling educational benefit to students?
And the compelling educational interest, I says, a lot of the folks who back single-sex education say things like boys tend to dominate in the classroom, and so if you separate them, that's better. And by separating out girls, you could allow them more opportunities to succeed in math and science and so forth. And that really is kind of the heart of your study, as I understand it, to find out if some of those claims really lived up to the hype.
Right, exactly. There are several gurus who go around the country hiring themselves out for large consulting fees to school districts to train teachers in their methods of single-sex schooling. And they do have the kinds of claims that you've stated. And so we wanted to gather the best available scientific evidence to see whether those claims are true and whether school districts are advised to adopt single-sex classrooms.
So let's talk about the study. When did it start? Where did you get the data from?
Well, we used a statistical technique called meta-analysis. And when you do that, you collect all available data on a particular question. In this case, we were able to locate 184 studies that tested kids in single-sex compared with coeducational schooling. That represents the testing of about 1.6 million students. So this is very definitive. We then applied statistical analyses to put together all of their results across a wide array of outcomes, including math performance, math attitude, self-esteem, and so on, and then reached the conclusions that we did reach, which is that there don't seem to be any benefits to single-sex schooling.
And as I understand the study, it breaks that conclusion up into two basic areas, sort of the educational side of things and then the social side of things. So let's start with the educational benefits or the findings that the study showed up in terms of educational benefits. The claims were that it would help improve educational performance. What did the study find?
Right. We had multiple measures of educational performance. We had math performance, science performance, verbal performance, as well as attitudes in those areas. And we didn't find any advantages to kids in single-sex schooling for any of those, for either girls or boys.
So none.
No advantages.
I got to ask you, were you surprised by that? I mean, going into a study like this, you must have had a hypothesis that something was going to change somewhere, but...
Well, one of the things we did in this study, there actually are a lot of very poor studies out there on single-sex schooling, and there's some excellent ones. Mm-hmm. The thing that differentiates between these two, and when I gave you the results, I was talking about the good studies.
Sure.
The poor studies often will compare kids in single-sex and co-ed schools that aren't equivalent. For example, there are lots of single-sex schools that are very elite. The kids come from families with money and education, and they compare it to some random co-ed school. The single best predictors of kids' educational performance is their parents' education and income. So it's not a fair comparison to take kids from a privileged school and those with an average school. So those are the poor quality studies, and sometimes they do find benefits to single sex. The better studies controlled for these pre-existing differences or did the best thing, which is randomly assign kids either to single sex or co-educational classes. That's when you've got a real experiment and you can really see what's going on. And those good quality studies are the ones that find no benefits to single-sex schooling.
And that we were talking about educational achievement there. What about that social side of things? You know, that boys might have an advantage in a co-ed situation. What did your study show there?
Well, we didn't look at studies that did things like the number of times teachers called on kids in mm-hmm. the classroom, for example. We just looked at kids' performance as you would measure it on paper and pencil test. But we did, for example, look at self-esteem. It's been claimed that girls will have better self-esteem in single-sex schools. We found no evidence for that. There was no benefit to single-sex.
All right, we're talking with UW psychologist Janet Hyde right now about her recent study on single-sex classrooms. The study shows no educational or social benefits to dividing classes by gender, and we'd like to hear from you on this. There's been a lot of talk, of course, here in Wisconsin about single-sex classrooms and the advantages or disadvantages of them. What do you make of it? What do you make of this study and its findings? Is this something that you might want for your child? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also send us an email. That address is talk@wpr.org. We're talking with UW psychologist Janet Hyde right now about her recent study on single-sex classrooms, which shows no educational or social benefits to dividing classes by gender. And we'd like to hear from you. What do you make of this idea behind single-sex classrooms? Do you have any personal experiences with this kind of education? Give us a call if you'd like to join in at 800-642-1234. You can also join in by email. That address is talk@wpr.org. Janet Hyde, before the break, we were talking about the results of the study, and not so good if you're a proponent of a single-sex education. So take us back, if you would, and maybe give us some of the reasons why schools would have been interested in going down this road in the first place.
Right. I mean, that's a good question. Part of it is that we feel that there's such a crisis in American education. American kids don't score well compared with their peers in other nations in some of these international testing programs. People are also worried about a crisis, for example, for ethnic minority kids. So when you're in this crisis mode and somebody says, I'll solve that problem. We'll just put the boys in one room and the girls in another room. You say, sure, we'll try that. So I think it's this crisis mentality. Part of the problem, though, is that that doesn't allow us to look at what the actual deeper causes are of this poor performance. There are some things that would really contribute to improving performance, but single-sex schooling is not one of them.
And here in Wisconsin, what has it looked like? How many school districts have gotten involved?
I don't know that I have an exact count. I believe that there are about 6 or 7 school districts that have instituted these programs. Some have quietly dropped them. Janesville, for example, had single-sex classes in their middle school. They dropped it. La Crosse dropped it. Beloit is the school district that is continuing these single-sex classrooms.
So as you look at the results of the study, are there any areas that you would like to study further, any demographic challenges that maybe weren't addressed by the study?
Yeah, one in particular. Claims have been made that the single-sex schools are particularly good for ethnic minority boys, especially African-American boys. And people say there's a state of crisis for them, although I'm not sure that it's a crisis compared to African-American girls, who I think also need attention. But the claim has been made that African-American boys will do especially well in single-sex schooling. We weren't able to find enough high-quality studies to make a conclusion one way or the other. So there's no demonstrated benefit, but we could stand to have some good studies of that question.
And I have to ask, so you didn't find any particular benefits. Did the study find any downsides, or is the lack of a benefit a downside?
Well, the lack of a benefit's a downside when it's very costly and cumbersome to institute single-sex classrooms in a public school, because the law says that if you're going to have, for example, a ninth grade algebra class and offer a boys' class and a girls' class, you also have to offer a co-ed class, because parents and students have a right to choice of what they're going to have. So that means that you have to have three identical algebra classes, and that means, you know, that's not feasible in a lot of school districts. It's unwieldy, it creates scheduling problems, and so on. So there's a cost, not to mention the cost of hiring these consultants to train the teachers. So it's been costly. And that means that if there's no benefit, it is a cost. The other issue, of course, is that it creates segregation. And in the United States, we frown on segregation. We don't like racial segregation. We shouldn't like gender segregation either. And it has some probably very negative consequences, such as gender stereotyping. So those are costs to it.
Let's go to the listeners right now. And if you'd like to join in, by the way, here's our phone number. It is 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Matt joins us from Middleton right now. Hi, Matt.
Hello. Actually, I decided to change my question after listening to the guest. My original one was to ask if there was a correlation with teen pregnancies and co-ed or non-co-ed. But actually, the question I'm more interested in after listening to you is if you accounted for that economic disparity you just discussed. For instance, if the schools are dividing their resources, trying to duplicate their classrooms, could that have an effect on the results? And I'll take my answer up here. Thank you.
Okay, that's a very good question. The economic disparities that we addressed in the study were if they controlled for economic advantage in single-sex schools that the parents, the families might have compared with co-ed schools. We didn't do an analysis, it just wasn't part of the scope of this study, of what it's costing schools to institute single-sex programs. I think I would love to see someone do that analysis. I think it'd be tough to do because I'm not sure schools would release their records, although they're public schools and you would think there would be public accountability. But it's a very interesting question.
And a very complicated one.
Yes.
You know, I mean, that's part of the trick to all this. As you talk about the complications of economic factors and educational achievement and all of that, it sort of goes back to what you started with in terms of people are looking for an answer, and this one appears to be an attractive one.
Right. It's a simple solution. We'll put the boys in one room and the girls in the other. What we really know helps to improve achievement and close achievement gaps are things like four-year-old kindergarten. We really ought to have that everywhere. The longer you leave kids out in preschools where well-to-do parents can buy good preschool care and poor parents can't, that just widens achievement gaps. There's a gap by the time kids enter kindergarten. So you want to have four-year-old kindergarten. That costs school districts something, but I think it's a much better investment of money than single-sex classrooms. We also need to expand to a 10 or 11-month school year. Kids from low-income families have a meltdown over the summer. They actually call it meltdown. They forget what they learned 3 months ago. So we really need to keep kids in school longer. Once again, that'll cost more. We'll have to pay teachers more. But those are good places to invest our funds.
Let's go back to the phones right now. Deborah joins us from Milwaukee. Hi, Deborah.
You know, boys and girls together in a classroom, in a school building at that age, it becomes more of a social issue than an educational issue for them. So I wonder, you know, and I think that is attributed to bullying. And you know, if you really break it down, I think, you know, the competition of boys around. Have you studied the aspect of singling out single sex schools to bullying, the bullying issue?
Yeah, that's an interesting point, too. And one of the things I try to stress with this is the difference between anecdotes and systematic scientific and information, and we've tried to provide the latter. There are lots of anecdotes about how girls, for example, get bullied by boys. If you look at studies of bullying, Most bullying is actually same-sex bullying. That is, it's boys bullying boys, and sometimes girls bullying girls, although not as much as boys bullying boys. So single-sex classrooms are certainly not the way to end bullying, because most of it is same-sex.
Tom joins us now from B-Town. Hi, Tom.
Yeah, hi. I went to a single-sex high school in the 60s, and I find that single-sex certainly kept us from thinking about the problems of puberty and giving our attention strictly to education and to sports. But I don't think that having single-sex classrooms in a co-ed situation is considered single-sex. You still have the interaction at lunchtime. You still have the interaction at break time between classes. And that takes away from the concept of having one sex going through the educational process. I don't know if you've done a study other than assuming that most single-sex schools are for the upper class, the wealthy. Back in the 60s, we had single-sex schools. Of course, they were religious schools. That was Catholic. With all income brackets, and we thought the education was a lot better than having, co-ed schooling.
Tom, thanks so much for the call. Janet, a couple of things there. What about that idea of interaction between classes and so forth?
Well, this caller is interested in single-sex schools, complete schools, mm-hmm. as opposed to classrooms. And once again, I want to emphasize the difference between anecdotes and systematic scientific information. So some people who went to single-sex schools say, wow, it was a great education. I can tell you I went to co-educational schools the whole time, and I thought it was a great education. So we can trade anecdotes, but what we need is systematic scientific information, and that's what this study provides, and it just shows no benefits. People, you know, single-sex schools do tout that characteristic, and they make the students believe it, but it doesn't hold up to the scrutiny of science.
So as you talk to policymakers, to legislators, to school board members, to parents, you know, who might be interested in this topic, two questions here. What do you hope that they'll take away from this study? And the second thing is, how do they react to it? Because a lot of people have a lot of emotional investment on one side or the other of this issue.
Well, right. I just hope that parents and also school districts will take the science to heart. We like science-based education rather than anecdotal-based education. And I know that people have strong feelings, and we just have to get past the anecdotes, I guess I'll have to say.
All right. Well, that's a great place to leave it. Janet, thanks so much for being here today. Janet Hind is a professor of psychology at UW-Madison and an author of the study on single-sex classrooms that we've just been talking about.